Cato showed them into a vast galleried hall where other servants took over. Ryan would have appreciated some leisure to admire the furnishings and the astonishing richness of the ville, but they were whisked up a wide stone staircase and then hurried into a maze of narrower passages and corridors, all lined with paintings and with ancient arms and armor hung on the oak paneling. The servants bustling about them were all female, in maroon blouses and surprisingly short maroon skirts and low-heeled boots of soft red leather. They looked to be mostly in their early 20s or late teens, and there was one young woman to each of the guests. None of them spoke. After going up and down three separate flights of stairs, even Ryan's excellent sense of direction had been thoroughly spun around and confused. An older woman in a longer skirt was in charge. A bunch of large keys dangled from a ring at her broad leather belt. She was in the lead, and she occasionally glanced behind to make sure they were all keeping up with her.
Here, these are the rooms arranged for you outlanders.
Arranged by who?
Mistress Marie.
She had a small notebook on a piece of cord, also attached to her belt, and she consulted it, reading out numbers and names, watching with an eagle eye to make sure the young servants obeyed her instantly.
Carter and Roth in 68, the boy in 67 next door. Do you wish to have the connecting door unlocked or kept bolted?
Unlocked, please.
Then in 64 is Dr. Tanner and Master Brother in 63. Those rooms also have a connecting door.
Locked, I think, dear lady, if you please. That would be most awfully kind.
Flustered by the sight of the old man's large and perfect teeth grinning at her, she automatically dropped him a curtsy.
Pleased to serve, sir. And 61 is for Dix and Wyeth. Show them to their rooms quickly, or you'll find some skin missing from your backs and blood down to your ankles.
The woman turned once more to Ryan.
Anything you want, just ask them. If you find any difficulty, then ask for me. My name is Mercy Wayman.
Oh, I've died and gone to heaven.
The bathroom was lined with tapestries and filled with steam. The heavy scent of pine had flooded into the main bedchamber after the servant had poured bath oil into the white enameled tub from a bottle of dark green liquid. She had shown them the closets and the toilet in the corner by the bath, folded back the layers of bedclothes, and pointed out an oak chest that held more blankets.
The bell pull goes direct to us in the cellars. Ring if there's anything you want and I'll come running for you. My name's Laura.
Once they were left alone, Christy raced Ryan for first to go at the bath. He was ahead, then one of the laces on his combat boots got snagged, and she was an easy winner. He sat on the floor, picking at the knot, watching her lithe, naked body, the burst of hair between her thighs, matching the flaming mane on her head.
Don't take too long.
He finally stripped off, walking into the bathroom. She was lying down, almost invisible behind a cascade of white bubbles, smiling up at him.
It's good to be real clean, lover. And it'll be good to have you real clean for a change.
He knelt down at the side of the tub and held out his hand for the soap. Christy gave it to him, closing her eyes and smiling.
Start at the top and just sort of work your way down, lover.
He rubbed the back of her neck, then around to the front, feeling the taut muscles relaxing under the massage. The soap smelled of fresh lilacs. Christy wriggled as his hands reached her breasts.
Ryan, we both have to bathe and then get ready to eat. I don't think this Baron is the sort of man who'd appreciate lateness, and if... Oh, you shouldn't do that, lover, or I'll...
Her hand snaked over the edge of the tub, reaching down for him. Her fingers tightened, bringing him to full readiness.
Oh, I thought you were worried about getting something to eat.
Christy grinned and kissed him on the mouth, her tongue sneaking between his lips. She broke away for a moment, looking down.
Something to eat.
After they'd finished, to their mutual satisfaction, they both got out and dried each other with the warm, fluffy towels that hung on the radiators.
What do you make of this place in the Baron?
I can't say. Got more jack than most other barons in the Deathlands put together. Daughter isn't one to turn your back on, and the Sekhmen are well trained. Not sure I'd want to go up against Harry Gateau.
It's Laura, sire and madam. They'll be serving supper in the main dining room in just 5 minutes. Miss Wayman says it's best not to be late.
They were on time.
You're all thinking that I look like a courier in Ives' portrait of Father Christmas. Don't deny it, my friends. Everyone says it.
Ryan had never heard of Courier and Ives, but he had certainly seen pictures of Santa Claus, knew that he had been a mystical figure from way before Skydark, who was a sort of patron saint for children and who gave presents to them. Nobody could argue with Baron Nathan Mandeville about the way he looked. He even dressed in a loose red shirt and red trousers to augment the impression. He looked to be in his late 50s, burly, running toward fat. His red cheeks spoke of a liking for alcohol or high blood pressure, perhaps both. A shock of thick white hair ran down past his ears and turned into a startling full beard and mustache. He had soft lips, like a young woman's. Mandeville sat at the head of a long table, with his daughter at his right hand. Marie was wearing a floor-length dress of black leather, perforated with hundreds of tiny holes, so that it shimmered like a fishing net. It wasn't quite possible to tell whether she was naked underneath the gown. There were seats for 20 or 30 at the refectory table, but only Mandeville and Marie were seated there. Ryan noticed another table, close to the entrance to the kitchen, where half a dozen young men were crowded together. Among them were Lamar and the others from the hunting party.
Come join me, ladies and gentlemen. I keep a poor table with only the most humble of food and drink, but you are most welcome to it, as is any traveler.
Mandeville gestured to Christie, pointing to the seat on his left.
Here, my dear, make an old man happy with your beauty. The rest of you, take what places you wish.
Ryan sat next to Christie, with Dean on his left. After some shuffling and hesitation, Doc found himself seated alongside Mistress Marie Mandeville, who pointedly ignored him, with Michael on his right. J.B. placed himself next to Michael, with Mildred opposite. The humble food and drink was as good as any of them had ever eaten. They began with a mousseline of salmon and juniper berries, served on a bed of diced fresh salad vegetables. Enormous trouble had been taken, with tiny carrots carved in crocus shapes, and tomatoes that looked like flowering roses. With it, the maroon-clad sommelier offered a light white wine, with a hint of quince and nettle in its palate. Following was a choice of carved meats, a side of beef or a loin of pork, with rosemary and clove sauce, and a monstrous turkey, deliberately undercooked a little, so that a fine pink juice trickled from the carver. There were also succulent ribs of lamb, served with a red currant jelly or a plate of plump pigeons stuffed with foie gras. Everyone's plate came with a delicate piped ring of creamy Duchess potatoes and a brown earthenware dish of 7 tiny portions of different vegetables, including broccoli and a puree of cauliflower. The dinner wine was a foreign one in a green bottle that Nathan Mandeville insisted on serving himself, taking it from the pudgy hands of the sommelier with as much reverence as if he were holding the Holy Grail.
In the olden days before Skydark, there were men who could have told you the chateau, the year, even which side of the hillside it came from. Just sip at it, friends, and you will, I think, appreciate its fine quality.
Ryan tasted it from a large bowled glass.
Not too bad.
Dean pulled a face.
Tastes bitter to me.
Nathan Mandeville's kindly face turned as sour as a lemon.
Not too bad. Bitter. Marie, what
it has
kind
a
of...
a wonderful bouquet. A premier cru, unless I miss my guess.
Doc poked his beaky nose inside the glass and inhaled deeply, watched with some admiration by the sommelier.
Ah, excellent. Where are the summers of yesteryear? There was once a marvelous O Medoc back in Paris in...
He caught Ryan's warning glance.
I just remember. But this is truly a remarkable wine, Baron Mandeville. I would consider it a great honor to be allowed to visit your cellars at some convenient time.
The Baron's chubby cheeks had softened again, the little blue eyes losing their icy coldness.
Ah, a man of taste and distinction, I can see, Doctor.
There was a choice of desserts, meringues as crisp as snow castles, rich, sticky puddings of dark chocolate, flavored with the zest of oranges, cakes that were layer upon layer of fruit sauces and whipped cream. Fresh fruit salad, covered with a potent clear liqueur, the Doc whispered was probably something called eau de vie framboise. For the first time during the meal, Marie Mandeville spoke.
You're right, Tanner. How come you know so much about good food and drink? A ragtag assortment of hired mercies like you lot.
We're not mercenaries. Seen some mercies a month ago up toward the Shans. We have good weapons, that's true. But we don't offer them for hire.
I have the finest collection of blasters east of the Pecos. Tomorrow, during my guided tour of Suncrest, you shall admire them.
Look forward to that.
The wine that came with the desserts wasn't like anything that Ryan had ever tasted before. Even Dean licked his lips and asked for more.
Would you like more? More, boy? This bottle here in my hand is quite possibly the last bottle of this vintage left in the entire world. Not just in the Deathlands, but in the world. It is from the late 1970s and is called the Mascade de Bon Tavanis. From the Domaine de Durban. For once, the label has survived the Holocaust.
Well, it tastes like...
The boy considered for a moment, his head to one side. Christy thought at that moment how like Ryan he looked.
Like a mixture of snow and honey.
You have redeemed yourself, young man.
Platters of cheeses were brought in by some of the silent women servants, with fresh-baked biscuits and pats of salted butter. They were accompanied by a tray of crystal decanters, each filled with a different colored drink. Dark green, light green, gold, cherry red, orange, and even blue. While they tried them out in very thin glasses, the Baron became more expansive.
Your weapons were mentioned earlier. Indeed, they were one of the first things that my dear daughter...
He blew a kiss to the stone-faced Marie.
...noted about you. I have a profound interest, not just in blasters, swords and daggers, but in all forms of weapons and all forms of fighting. Do you have any special skills among you? I cannot believe that such a sturdy group is without combat talents.
Everyone looked at Ryan, waiting for him to give them a lead.
Most of us can fight some.
But Ryan was always aware of another of the traitor's aphorisms, this time relating to how you dealt with any baron, particularly in the heart of his own ville.
Trust half of what you see, and nothing of what you hear.
Oh, cautious, Carter, very cautious. Every now and again, we have small contests, competitions, and games. Call them what you like, just within Suncrest. Helps to keep everyone on their toes, you understand.
Ryan felt a slight pressure against the side of his thigh as Christy moved her knee to touch him. They had been together long enough for him to be fully aware of the hint of a warning in that moment. But her feeling that something wasn't quite right simply complemented his own concern. Here was this amazingly wealthy ville and this jolly, outgoing baron. In the Deathlands, the two things simply didn't go together. How, for instance, had Baron Mandeville obtained such wealth?
I look forward to watching these games.
And taking part?
Perhaps.
Good! Good! Now, I have some special genuine coffee shipped up to me from the Blue Mountains of the Western Indies. Can any of you be tempted?
Everyone around the table nodded enthusiastically. What generally passed for a coffee sub in the Deathlands had its origins in acorns or burned sugarcane or any of 100 other bizarre concoctions. The servants shimmered into sight again. Ryan had noticed that Harry Gateau had joined the fops at the lower table, and thought he caught an exchange of glances between the sec man and the lady of the ville. He wondered whether Gateau had been checking up their rooms, and guessed that he probably had. But he wouldn't have found anything potentially harmful to their cover story. Nobody carried documents or identity cards to prove who they were. The coffee was served from what Mildred told Ryan were Georgian silver pots into tiny paper-thin cups of the finest oriental porcelain. The sugar had been so processed that it had turned almost white, and the cream was fresh.
Can I ask you a question, Baron?
What would you like to know?
All of this. This ville. It didn't come cheap, did it?
No!
The man's laugh was so infectious that everyone around the long table found themselves grinning. Except, Christy noticed, the Mistress Marie.
You robbed the bank in Jack City?
Oh, yes! Something like that, Carter. Now, more liqueurs? If not, then perhaps it's time for all of us to withdraw to our beds. Busy day tomorrow.
The question had come and gone, unanswered. But Ryan had seen the drop in temperature in those merry little eyes, the narrowing of the lips under the magnificent white beard, the visible tightening of the knuckles around the handles of the silver cream jug. Mandeville's wealth was obviously an off-limits area. It was also clear that the evening meal was at an end. The Baron rose quickly, but his daughter was already gone from the table. She disappeared without a word. The young women servants appeared to shepherd the guests to their rooms, with Mercy Wayman leading the way. They all paused in the main corridor before splitting up for the night.
One thing I must tell you, ladies and gentlemen, Baron Mandeville is, like all men in his position, sometimes subject to threats from the lawless elements outside the walls. As a consequence, there is stringent security within Suncrest. There is a strict curfew operated, and the Ville is ceaselessly patrolled by armed and vigilant Sekhmen.
Wouldn't expect it to be patrolled by a sleepy, unarmed Sekhmen.
J.B. got a freezing glance from the woman.
If you die because you have not listened to my warning, Mr. Dix, then I hope you will not blame me.
Of course not. Can you get on with it?
These guards have orders to shoot on sight without the formality of a challenge. You must not leave your rooms.
Sure.
To help ensure your safety, Baron Mandeville has instructed me to lock your rooms after you are within them. They will be opened in good time for tomorrow's activities.
What if there's a fire?
The boy got a wintry smile from Mercy.
That has all been taken care of. Emergency procedures will liberate you safely.
It occurred to Ryan that there was an awful lot of safe and safety being talked about. He wondered just whose safety was really involved.
Of course, if there should be any problem during the hours of curfew, such as a sudden illness, then you all have the bells within your room to summon assistance. Which will, of course, arrive with a full security presence. Now, good night.
Ryan had planned to talk with the others as soon as they were left alone, but the curfew, confirmed by the turning of the key in the heavy brass lock, canceled that. He went straight to the windows, pulling aside the maroon velvet drapes. It was pitch dark outside the Ville, and the leaded windows were locked shut. High-grade steel bars had been set deeply into their stone frames.
Those'll stop anyone getting in at Mandeville.
Ryan tested them, finding that they didn't budge at all.
Or stop any of us getting out.
Ryan had always found it difficult to fall asleep in a strange bed, particularly when the bed was as vast and luxurious as this one in the west wing of the Ville of Suncrest. Christy prodded the mattress, shaking her head.
I swear that it's goose feather, lover.
Goose feather? We had one like that back home in Front Royal. Great in winter. In summer you lay on it, and it kind of enveloped you like a sucking pit. It was all you could do to fight your way out of its embrace.
I think it's romantic. Like in that old folk song about the princess who runs off with the gypsy into the forest. You know it, Ryan?
Yeah, I think so.
Ryan walked across the deep piled carpet and pressed his forehead against the cold metal of the bars that closed off the window.
I guess we didn't have a lot of choice about coming here.
I can't get a true feeling about it. There's a sort of softness in the Ville, but hard underneath, like... well, like this mattress, but with barbed wire hidden at the bottom.
We could have opened up and blasted them away when Dean fell.
Sure we could, Ryan. And one of those Sekhmen could easily have blown the boy's skull apart. You said yourself they were well trained.
I guess. Still... let's go to bed and catch up on sleep. Then see what the Baron has to show us in the morning.
Ryan found the immensely soft mattress was just like his worst childhood memories. Wonderful for the first 5 minutes, then it became too hot, wrapping itself around his body so that he seemed to be sinking slowly into a quagmire. He tossed and turned, trying not to keep Christy awake. But she had used the meditation techniques taught by her mother and was fast asleep, lying on her back, her breath clicking faintly in her throat. Eventually, grudgingly, Ryan slithered into a shallow, fitful darkness.